Okay, right. Bruce Williamson from the organisation Rail Future should be renamed, Bruce, Rail No Future.
Yeah, I mean, an organisation like ours, obviously, we want to promote a positive story for the railway, and it's quite hard at the moment when things have gone so horribly wrong. It undoubtedly has been a bad week or three for the railway.
But why has it taken 3 weeks? Well, haven't they fixed it now? It's Grayling's fault now, isn't it?
It's partly Grayling's fault. I mean, you're in a mood to blame everyone. I do too, actually. There's no one single culprit here.
Yeah, Chris, but he's Grayling the boss, isn't he? He's the boss.
Yeah, he is the boss. He's got to take the rap, I think. His department have failed in many regards.
Well, if we had a Prime Minister of any note at all, the Prime Minister would have sacked him for being a useless piece of... for uselessness.
Well, I mean, just wait and see. If I was a gambling man, I wouldn't imagine him being in his job for very much longer.
Let me ask you this, Bruce. Look, we talked about this last week. It can't be a difficult thing to run railway. There's only one line. There's only one line in whatever you're on. Say we're going from, you know, one, but there's one line. You're not in competition with somebody with another line opposite it. It's just one line. All you've got to do is work out how many people take the train, at what times, put on adequate amount of rolling stock, and Bob's your uncle. It works. Yeah. So what is the problem? Why are these people so useless?
James, I'm sorry, it is quite a lot more complex than that. In most cases, it isn't just one line. You have one line which is shared between different train operators. So they have to work together to timetable their trains so that they don't clash. You have to timetable the trains so that they meet up with each other so passengers can get connections. You have to train the drivers in the new routes that they'll be running and in the new trains that you'll be running. You have to manage the recruitment of those train drivers so that you have enough in time for when the new service starts.
Well, I'm sorry, but that doesn't sound that difficult.
We had a far more complex system in the 50s and 60s, and yet they managed to do it without all the computers that we've got now.
I'm not saying that it's not possible to get it right, but I'm saying it is complex. You know, managing a railway is an immensely complex beast, and this is part of the problem, really. When one part goes wrong, you have so many knock-on effects that affect other passengers and other lines and other aspects of the industry.
Should we have so many rail companies? Maybe we have to? I mean, I'm not in favour of nationalisation. I don't like the idea.
It wasn't that bad, though, British Rail, I think.
Well, I can remember it was pretty atrocious, and most of the people had miserable faces as well. I don't want to see that. Mind you, most of the people in the railways now have miserable faces.
It's part of the job, isn't it? Yeah.
And here's another thing, Bruce, while you're thinking about it. Can you get elocution lessons for the people who actually do the announcements? Because some of them...
Yeah, turn the speakers up as well.
Yeah, you can't understand a bloody word most of them say. So can we do something about that?
I would definitely hire James Whale as a voiceover artist. Can you give me an example? You know, the 1803 is late into Paddington. We apologise.
I'll do it. Okay, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to apologise that the 1830 train to Paddington is going to be delayed. Now, the problem is that the driver forgot his sandwiches. He's had to go home. Yeah. But as soon as he's back, we will get you to your destination as soon as we can. So we apologise. The 1830 to Paddington has been delayed. Stay tuned and we'll bring you the very latest when we have... It's easy. It's not difficult.
It is easy. You're such a professional, James. And I know I like your sincerity and your honesty there, really. I think, you know, there is actually, in all seriousness, there is a point to be made here about communication. I think the train operating companies have failed in the past to communicate, you know, what's going on and why as well, you know, and that just sort of adds to passengers' frustration that there's no train and no one seems to know why.
Let's talk, and I'm available, by the way, and I'm reasonably priced, okay? So we can let me know when you want to do something like that. Let's talk about compensation, because I'm not really sure... You can compensate somebody for the sort of mess up of their day.
Well, how can you compensate? Like, if you've got a rail card, you can. But I'm on an Oyster card, Flynn. How am I going to get compensated for a little journey here and a little that's been late or made me go to St Albans?
Are you suggesting St Albans is not a very nice place?
It's nice, but you don't want to go there at 11 in the evening and have to end up, you know.
Well, it's a very good Indian restaurant in St Albans.
I might do that. I'll do that next time.
Yeah. Sorry, Bruce, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, compensation is no compensation, if you know what I mean. People would much rather have their train and get there on time. But I think it's right that we do have compensation. You know, it's the sort of next best thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to pay the full price for a ticket and not get there and not get your money back at the end of it. Which did a report recently, I think, which you might be referring to, which, you know, they said that the train operating companies are sort of going out of their way to, you know, not be fully honest and open about how much compensation they're entitled to, which, you know, that's the sort of...
Okay, let's cut to the quick. I mean, are these people who are operating the railways at the moment, their businesses, do you think they've bitten off more than they realised, and that they have now come to the realisation that maybe it wasn't a way to make an enormous amount of money?
Yes, I think that has definitely happened with some franchisees in the past, and I think both the franchisees and the Department of Transport are guilty here, because the Department for Transport is obviously scrutinising the bid and saying, do those sums add up? And sometimes when the sums don't add up, or the franchise bid is inadequately staffed, they still accept the bid anyway, because they want to either get the most money or pay the least subsidy. And that's another contributing factor to the sort of problems we've seen on GTR and Northern.
Okay, so rail future, what sort of future is there for it? I mean, we've not had a new line north to south now since Victorian times. We are about to get one, but it looks like that's going to be delayed for years and years and years. We invented the flipping railways.
Flipping railway.
Yeah. And we, you know, the French railways work wonderfully well. There are railways in other European countries that are far superior.
They all work better than ours, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems the union...
And they're much cheaper.
Yeah.
Ours are ridiculously expensive.
Well, that's because the unions want to get... You get, if you're a train driver or an underground train driver, you're earning fortunes, aren't you? Yeah.
You start on 55 grand.
Yeah.
As a tube driver, you start on 55 grand.
And what do? You press a button. Come on.
A doctor starts on 23 grand. So you're already over twice what a doctor starts on.
Well, there we go. Yes, go on, Bruce. Come on.
A rail future. I mean, the rail future is actually very rosy. And the problem is that we as an industry, you know, as a nation, failing to keep up with demand, failing to match the investment that's needed to cope with the growth in passenger numbers that we've seen over the last 20 years. You know, passenger numbers have doubled. Have we got double the amount of lines and trains and stations? No, of course we haven't. So that's why we suffer... these overcrowded trains.
Is it, we come back to politicians here, don't we, Bruce, who cannot make a decision.
No. Well, and they don't think long-term. That's the real problem. Any politician is looking 5 years ahead to the next election. When it comes to the railway, you need much, much longer-term thinking. You need 20, 30, 40-year visions for how the railway is going to run. And make that investment now, which sadly won't pay off while you're still in power, which is why they're reluctant to do it, you know.
It's the same with the health service and everything else. And we have to actually make politicians realise that we don't expect them to be running the country for their own benefit or their own political careers, which is what they seem to have become misguidedly led into, but I'm going to wake them up, so don't worry too much about that. When are we going to see more driverless trains? Because we don't actually need drivers on trains, really. Computers can do it. It's a bit of a waste of time, because if I've waited on the platform once, I must have waited a dozen times for an announcement saying that we're waiting for a driver, or we've not got a driver, or whatever.
Well, I mean, I would remind you that we've had driverless trains for 30 years or so on the Docklands Light Railway.
Yeah, I know, so why haven't we spread them further?
I think there's two factors that I can think of. Firstly, passengers like that human presence, and I think they still, it's the same with planes, actually. You know, they like the idea that there's a human in charge, even though the computer might be more reliable and safe. And I think what is actually very important as well is that there is that human presence on board the train of some sort. I think it would be, you know, passengers wouldn't like, and I think there would be, you know, genuine safety concerns if there were a train with no driver and no guard or conductor or any sort of, you know, company presence at all, and passengers were left to their own devices. That wouldn't be satisfactory. So I think we'll need human intervention of some sort, always.
Yeah, I think I would like to have some smiley human being walking up and down.
I don't care. Just move the train along and I'll get out like the maglev on the plane. But why have they done this change of timetables? Is it the reason they say, or are there other, is it money reasons?
No, it's not money reasons. It's to do with major investments. So there's all sorts of new trains, new routes, new bits of line, new bits of electrification, and so on. And so when you're changing the way the railway runs, you have to change the timetable to take into account these changes and this investment and so on. So, you know, it should have been a really good news story. We should have seen, you know, new trains, new capacity, less overcrowding, more services, more routes, and so on. And you know, it's gone horribly wrong, as we're all only too painfully aware, I think. Mm. It will sort itself out, but there's no quick fix. There's no magic bullet. It's going to take a long time until, you know, these new timetables are sort of up and running smoothly.
Yeah, but you know, I think we'd all feel a lot better if a couple of people, the heads of the companies who thought this was a good idea, Chris Grayling, and some of the senior management as well, fell on their swords, because I'll bet some of them are going to be paid off. They're going to have a nice bonus hidden away somewhere. Nice. I think it's about time people who made cock-ups like this actually had themselves to pay for it.
Well, I mean, I think, yes, we've seen the very bad publicity for Mark Carn, the outgoing chief of Network Rail, who was awarded a CBE recently, and the timing of that could not have been worse.
And what was it? Hang on, I wanted to talk about that, and it happened over the weekend. Well, why was he given a CBE? Mr. Ash, who sits at my right hand and has done for some 20 years, has never been given any kind of plaudits at all.
Not even an inkling.
No, not an inkling. Yet this buffoon, for running the railways, not very well,
for a couple of years,
gets a CBE. Why?
I think there is an argument you said that, you know, why is it always the people at the top of the pile who get the rewards and not the people at the coalface doing the real work? You know, in fairness to Mark Carn, he actually has done some good work at Network Rail. The problem is it won't be seen. You won't know about it until, you know, several months or years down the line. But he has improved project management, and I think, you know, we will reap the rewards of that in the longer term.
Yeah, but you know, I don't understand why we give some people an honour like that for doing a job that they are well paid for, and other people who are doing an equally important job, who I don't understand it. It seems a ridiculous thing. Yeah. Give honours to people who've done things above and beyond the call of duty. And not, by the way, just because you're a very wealthy businessman,
or you give a celebrity,
a few hundred thousand pounds to your local charity.
A lot of hard work, Eamon,
James Whale, CBE, is that
no, no, he would never accept a CBE.
I'm going to be a lord.
Lord Whale, I think that's the way.
Baron Whale.
Baron is better, would be better, you know, we have a great history as far as railway is concerned. Mm. And we're just throwing it away. That's what, you know, that's what it seems to me. I would take the train to go to work if I could rely on it. I can't rely on it. And even if I'm sat in traffic, I prefer to be sat in traffic and a master of my own destiny.
No, you're going to get there.
Than stuck on a railway line with somebody mumbling something that I can't understand through the tannoy system.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to, you know, to identify the problems with rail travel, but for all its faults, people still use it and still need or want to use it.
Yeah, but they don't have a choice in many cases, Bruce. Yeah. This is the thing. You have, you know, nobody would want to be herded onto some of these carriages, shoved in like animals.
Some have lost their actual links in this change, and they've actually, you know, it takes them another hour each way longer now.
Yeah, but I mean, that's inevitable. You know, any change is going to sort of benefit some and disbenefit others, isn't it? So you have to look at the bigger picture. So, I mean, you know, again, if and when all this timetable chaos is sorted out, then we will have better rail services overall, although not absolutely everyone will enjoy better rail service.
Yeah, but you see, I can't understand how they've come. If that is the case, they must have gone through it and they must have tested it in their minds. They must have had, you know, models set up and they must have gone through
that's
this.
True, yeah.
Why?
I'll tell you why. They've got computer software that does it, but the problem is they haven't got the staff to manage it, and they were, for various reasons, they were forced to do this at very, very short notice, so they didn't really have all the opportunities.
Oh, that sounds like Chris Grayling again.
It is Chris Grayling's fault in that regard, because he reduced the number of timetable nerds at the Department for Transport, or at Network Rail, rather, so they didn't have the staff to manage the new timetable, and you know...
Well, that's interesting. I've not heard that before. Then that lays the blame directly at Chris Grayling's door.
To a large extent, I think it does, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, you know, everyone is guilty here. Network Rail, train operating companies, Chris Grayling, Department for Transport, they've all failed in this.
But shouldn't there be an emergency meeting? I mean, Lord Adonis said there should have been a Cobra meeting. This is a national emergency.
Lord Adonis,
yeah, I think so.
Lord
I
Adonis
think...
on this programme last week said that the new railway timetables had had a worse effect on this country than a terrorist strike.
I'm not sure I'll go quite that far. But, you know,
economically,
you're absolutely right in that no one's, well, actually, many people warned about this. Look, we're not ready. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. But no one had the guts to say, whoa, let's not do this. We're not ready. It ain't going to happen. And I think everyone was sort of just crossing their fingers and going along with this kind of groupthink mob mentality. Oh, it'll be all right. It's someone else's problem, you know. And that's how we end up in the mess we're in. I think you need to speak to sort of an expert psychologist about how very bad decisions are made. But it's an example of that, I think.
See, what we need is a Donald Trump in charge of the railways. That would sort it out. We'd have no problem at all. No, we'd have no problem at all. Bruce, for the moment, thank you very much indeed. Bruce Williamson, who is from Rail Future.